or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden, exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
And welcome back, folks, to this edition of the Hagman and the Hagman Report. So glad you've joined us. So glad you're with us. If you're watching us live on YouTube, you can see us. Hello. We can see you, too. Just kidding. I will get an email saying, what do you mean you can see us? And if you're listening to this, regardless of where you're listening to this, by computer, if you're sitting in front of your computer, God bless you. If you're listening to this broadcast with your significant other, your husband, your wife. We've got actual families that listen to this and church groups that meet to listen to our broadcast. This broadcast is being pumped into a diner at an undisclosed location as we speak. Everyone in the diner, just go ahead and stand up and do the wave. Yeah, right. I'm sure the people there appreciate that. But if it's Tuesday, it's Tuesdays with Stan. And Stan Deo is a great friend of the program. Stan Deo is one of the, I mean, he's got character integrity and certainly a great understanding of all things, science related. He is our go-to guy. You know, we've got certain people we go to for certain things. When it comes to physics and science and stuff like that, it's Stan Deo. But before we bring him on, I want to ask everyone in our audience, you know, you're going to hear Stan tonight. He's not quite feeling all that good, all right? Here's what I'd like everyone to do tonight. When you hit your knees tonight, or even where you're at right now, I want you to pray for Stan Deo. Pray a hedge of protection over him from attacks from Satan, especially. Pray for his a miraculous healing of Stan, because he suffered some both trauma and chronic injuries and impairments. We need Stan. We need him a lot. I need him a lot. Joe needs him a lot. You and I need him a lot. Please, folks, when you hit your knees tonight, make sure you pray for Stan Deo, his health, and Holly too. She needs it as well. But Stan, as well. And pray for energy for Stan and for rest, vitality and vigor, but also rest. We need him around. And he's with us tonight. He's not feeling too well. So, folks, we're not going to keep him the entire hour, okay? We're not going to hold him to the entire hour. We're going to let him go whenever he wants to. Because, yeah, it's not feeling too well. But please, and send him an email of support. Support Stan Deo through his website, through his products, his books. And keep both him and Holly in your prayers. Stan, thanks for joining us, man. I know it's rough, but God bless you, brother. Thank you for that.
Appreciate that. And, I guess I am a bit tired from all this pain. I just I'm dealing with it. But anyway, I'm still working on this lecture stuff for the Colorado Springs lecture. And
when is that, Stan?
That's 15th, 16th, 17th of July, I think it is, at the Marriott there. I've been working on Holly's book, trying to get it ready for press and correcting errors that I made. And it's an amazing thing, a real challenge to go through and organize all the pages of text and pictures in her books, or anybody's books for that matter, to get them to all line up properly within the margins and not leave too much space at the bottom of each page. And when you're doing that with, nearly 600 pages and condensing it down, it takes a while. And so I've been doing that instead of doing my lecture stuff. So now that I'm staying up till about 2 o'clock every morning to try to catch up and get two lectures done, one on her book and one on the Atlantis and the flood, the cause of the flood, that meteorite that we've talked about. And I've put a picture of the front cover of Holly's new book, which should be out of the press by the end of June. They'll roll presses pretty soon. It's called Prophetic Perils, and she covers quite a bit of stuff in that. There's 20 chapters, but I'll be covering those in the lecture. The first, I think probably four chapters are on things that I've dealt with at great length myself, earthquakes and volcanoes and patterns and what's happening. And her book is basically telling you why you need to prepare and what the signs are that are being revealed in the news. I know, bits and pieces have been done by other authors about this, but this is a typical Holly fashion, a one-stop shop for all the things that you need to know about in prophecy and current events. And some of it, one chapter on the falling away in the church, the apostasy in the church, was really a hard thing for her to write. It was just so demoralizing to see how many pastors had led the sheep astray or had betrayed them with funds and various other things they've done. When I read that chapter, I wanted to weep. It was so bad to see that happening to the church. And of course, other climate changes that she's addressing, like wildfires and, thousand-year events that are occurring two or three at a time now, instead of waiting a thousand years, great rainfalls and fires and hurricanes. She also covered things that I've been looking at in The Sun, the likelihood of the Carrington event and various other signals in The Sun that it's going through a change. And I've talked about this on the show a number of times. Because we have a scientific community that in the main believes that the universe is 15 billion years old, we cannot get reports from them that tell us, the sun could go red giant in 100 years or 1,000 years. They're talking millions and hundreds of millions. And so everybody feels rather comfortable that things will go on as they always have and there won't be any big upsets in nature. But I was just reading a book I haven't quite finished yet, written by Jay Hall, who has a master's in science over in Texas. And he listens to the show. And thank you, Jay, for sending me the information to get your book. I got it on Amazon as an e-book. And he covers in a paper, it's a book, but I'll tell you what, it's like a doctoral dissertation on why traditional science has got it all wrong, why they are missing the boat of how old the universe and the Earth is. And I'm definitely going to plug his book in my lecture, because Christians need to read it to share with people that are diehard scientists in the traditional scientific school to get them to wake up and see that catastrophes is what cause things, not gradual inch or micro inch or whatever erosion of the Grand Canyon by a river flow. That's just ridiculous. There's so many things against stuff like that that I don't know why they don't study it. But anyway, I've enjoyed reading the book so far because there are just so many things as a scientist that I see in there that are spot on. I'd say, yes, well, that why does traditional science see that? And because of that, you know, we have a younger Earth and a younger sun. And the sun is not going to get to be very old. We know from the Revelation and John that at the end of the millennial period, that the Earth and the sun and the universe, everything will disappear. It will pass away in a fervent heat and be replaced by a new heaven and a new Earth. And I suspect what's going to happen is the sun will go red giant or nova and destroy our solar system and probably others nearby. And then, of course, the universe will just melt down itself. But it's not billions of millions of years. It's like in thousands at the most. A thousand and a bit, I think, would be the proper term. So I look at the sun, and when Holly's writing about it here in the book and saying the sun is behaving irregularly, you know, erratically, I can see that it's going to be moving closer to its extinction protocol a lot faster than people thought. And we're going to see fulfillments of this as the sun throws off a cloud of dust and the light of it changes and becomes brighter, and the cloud of dust filters the light, makes it red on the moon so that the moon looks like it's turned the color of blood. All these things are clear and real and present dangers in spite of what mainstream science says. They just won't listen to the truth of their, you know, in arguments that they could buy, you know, they could understand. Anyway, I like that chapter on her book. We talked a lot about it while she was writing, and she goes on to do, you know, bioweapons and disease spread and our lack of defense, and how the government has actually been putting contagious disease research labs right in the middle of highly populated cities and areas. You know, right next door to some shopping center, you might find a little lab hidden away there that's working with viruses and stuff that could kill the entire country. But anyway, the insanity of what she's finding, what we're doing, is just beyond me. I shake my head. And she also covers in one of the chapters about famine, the increase of that, and the idiocy of stuff like taking corn that we would feed livestock and ourselves with and turning it into ethanol for fueling cars. This is madness. We're going to go starving because we want to drive down the street and look cool or something, and, you know, we're giving our food away to make ethanol. That's going to have to change. And, you know, the other thing that she's covered, which is just when I was hearing her, what she was finding in there, China, Japan, Europe, a lot of countries are buying real estate property here in the States, not for housing, but they're buying farms and buying water supplies. And they're just taking our natural resources we need to live on, and they're owning it and sending the stuff back to their own countries. Can you believe that?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. You know, Stan, when I was reading about that, the first thing that came to my mind, aren't there any laws that would prohibit governments from doing that, from taking over, even though it's a natural, natural bill of sale or natural sale or regular routine sale? It would be, to me, counterintuitive to allow that to happen, and therefore I would think that the federal government would have something to say about it, but they don't, that I can find. I mean,
yeah, I know Australia is thinking about it pretty seriously because they got such a small production area for the landmass they've got, and the Chinese are, I think the Chinese are trying to buy a very, very, well, the largest cattle ranch in Australia. And there's been talk in their parliament about how do we limit the amount of foreign ownership when they can buy it through proxy companies and all kinds of stuff. And, you know, China's the biggest offender down there, and they're probably the biggest offender here in this country. But people should have made laws. It's hindsight to say, okay, this much property, is national trust and should not be allowed to be sold overseas no matter what. But it's moving us toward this one world government control of all, you know, arable land and water resources and energy. And it's just, they don't want you to be a country anymore. They want you to be part of the great world, you know, population, which is fine right. if Jesus is running it, but not when greedy you know, politicians and warring agencies are running. It's just, you know, it makes you almost schizophrenic to have to argue for, yeah, a world government sharing resources and everybody getting a fair shake, that's a great idea, and then say, no, I don't like what's coming down the pike as far as the man-made efforts to form this global dictatorship. You're kind of torn between the two, you know. You can see the logic of it, but not the people running it, or will be running it anyway.
That's right.
Favorite yeah. things to complain about. And then, of course, you know, we've got, I hope I'm not offending too many of your listeners about, you know, the gay behavior, but the increase of that has just astounded me. The percentage of the population that's gay means that your reproduction rate's going to drop and your civilization will die if you don't reproduce fast enough. And to see it becoming such a thing in the community where you can't speak certain words or go to the toilet without having somebody of the opposite sex come in and say, oh, I'm transgender, you know, move over. I'm just astounded by these things happening so rapidly and turning us into a mess.
Well, yeah, and we've spoken so much about that, Stan, about the homosexual agenda, the minority. I mean, it's such a slim minority who identify as homosexuals. I mean, in reality, but the money behind it makes it appear that it's a massive. Well, it is a massive movement, but the numbers are. I mean, 3% perhaps is about what is an accepted number of LGBTQ members. Now you've got, true LGBTQ, but you've got that 3% dictating, governing 97%. It would seem to me if we would just show up, we could win on the numbers alone. But you know, you've got this the silence from the pulpits and the silence from Christian men and women, the protectors. See, I look at it this way. I'm a protector of my family. And they're encroaching, among other things, they are encroaching and taking away rights from my family. And to me, I look at it as having to stand up and say, no, you're not going to do this to me or my family, and certainly not my community or my country. But not, I mean, in that order, I suppose. And it's because it's biblically, it's a biblical abomination. It's an abomination in the eyes of God. But it's part, to me, as I said before, part of a larger mosaic and a larger tapestry of this cultural assault against our faith and our morals and our integrity and our society. That's my view.
It is. And if you look at history, I mean, long time history, but way beyond the United States, back into the, you know, BC period in the Sumerian Valley and stuff, men and women were different, and women had a privacy that was given to them. And now then, with these new social laws or mores, a woman cannot go into a restroom and feel, you know, totally protected and private, because some turkey might come in there and say, oh, I'm a woman this week, I feel like a woman. Well, you know, this is going to lead to crime and all kinds of problems, and it's just destroying the fabric of our culture.
The further we move away from the Bible, you know, the commandments, the everything precepts. Within the Bible, the precepts of the Bible, the further we move away from that, the more trouble we get into. And of course, to me, and I see that we are under the yoke of a tyrannical Luciferian agenda. Lucifer certainly is the lord over our earthly realm here, and it's certainly you're right, man. I mean, you're right. It's just, it's crazy. It's ridiculous. I mean, even 10 years ago, would you have thought of this 10 years ago? 15
no.
years ago?
Yeah, absolutely not.
Not even 5 years ago.
They've done everything they can, these globalists, to destroy America. Everything that comes out of their mouth as far as legislation and PC-type dictionaries is designed to destroy, to fragment the culture and the population of this country, and they're doing it.
Right.
You want to strangle some of these people. I get so irritated with it.
Well, call me up when you do, because I'll back you up. I'll give you a backup. We'll both be a sight for sore eyes, but we can, between
Holly,
the two of us.
When Holly was writing this book, she was just, there would be nights that she'd just sit up there and you'd see the look on her face was absolute desperation. Just, she says, I just cannot believe all this is happening so quickly. She says, it's terrible. But it's fulfilling prophecy, and people need to realize that. I knew about certain things that she was writing about. I'd read or seen a news report on, the Islamic State or on, the rise of paganism and the academy and stuff like that. But when she put it all together with all the instances, not just in the United States, but in Australia and China and the Middle East even, and in Europe, I thought, goodness gracious, I didn't realize that it was happening so widespread. All these other populations, they're getting it in the neck just like we are.
Yeah.
Speaking of getting it in the neck, that's, of course, where the believers and people who won't take the mark of the beast in the tribulation period get dealt with. They chop their head off. Well, that's just an extension of what they're doing in the Middle East. I mean, there are a number of the Islamic states over there that beheading is the death du jour. Hey, let's get rid of people that are against the state or their religion and chop their heads off. And this is increasing. Holly's covered the number of beheadings, showing it, year by year, how many places are doing that and how many people have been beheaded for stupid stuff, too, I might add. But that's coming under this new Islamic one world religion that Chris Lam, whatever is coming, they're going to use that, I'm sure. I've done shows with Catholic radio shows here in the last few weeks, some in New Zealand and Australia, and they're Catholic. They aren't evangelicals like we are, but I'm surprised when I hear them talking about the same problems and being dissatisfied with the Pope, thinking he's a traitor, the current Pope Francis. And there's a large migration from the Catholic Church to the home Bible study groups and the evangelicals because of their disenchantment with what's happening in the Vatican. But America.
Before your arrival tonight, we were talking about the meeting between the Sunni sheikh and the Pope at the Vatican Palace. I don't know whether you saw that. Really an interesting situation where the Pope said, asked to comment about the meeting between this Sunni sheikh, this imam, head imam of the highest imam of the Sunni sect of Islam, and the Pope. And the Pope asked about the meeting, said, our meeting is the message. And I thought, you talk about a heavy duty, to me anyway, a heavy duty, that's pretty heavy, okay? Because what does that say?
Man. I know.
And that's
what
the article
is. I'm still thinking America's in trouble with all these things going wrong, with the number of illegals and terrorists that have gotten into the country. We're going to have the civil war that the Hopi told me about a long time ago. We're going to just see, people like armed gangs and tribes and stuff. And this is going to be probably the reason why they're going to declare martial law. I did read an article, I'm sure you saw it in the paper or even on the Google News, about a place in Indiana there, Beech Grove, where the military was flying over with helicopters and dropping SEALs out on a university, making a mock attack, and guns were going off and helicopters are buzzing houses, and somebody forgot to tell them this is just an exercise, but they figured it out after a while. But why are they doing that in populated areas? It's not for practice to go over and go how
that's what my dad said, Stan. We talked about the story in our first hour, and my dad says that you practice and prepare where you're going.
You train where you fight. Yeah, you fight where you train.
Yeah.
And that's exactly right.
Well, of course, where we live here in our house here in Colorado, about 5 miles north of us is where the Army does its practice with its tanks and all kinds of armament. And so we get pretty used to helicopters coming over the house at night, you know, real low, like that, vibrating the house and everything. And big gunfire just across the bridge there. You know, you can see the flashes and stuff and the flares going off and practicing. And so we get kind of desensitized to it, but I know that they're coming for us. That's the whole plan. And, the population cannot sit and do nothing with all this happening. There's going to be a number of people that are saying, I've had enough. They're going to pick up arms, and it's going to happen. And once it starts, we're all going to be pulled into it one way or another. I just am, I'm so, like, sad, despondent to see this happen to the country that you and I grew up in. You know, I'm a little bit older than you guys, and I'm part of the great generation, born in 45. And I got to see the best of that world and the world that came in the 50s. And it's just been thrown away by people not paying attention to who was taking care of them. And my dad and his brothers and his friend, you know, General Walker, all kinds of people, tried to wake up the American population to what was happening, you know, to stop it. And it for a while we had maybe a million people aware and doing things, and they went to sleep and let it happen. And I'm so glad that my dad and Holly's dad are not here to see this. They would have just died of an apoplectic fit over what they saw in the news. Anyway.
Yeah, and I think the same way too. I mean, I remember my father serving in World War II in the Pacific, and you know, and all through his life, he was a big patriot. And so was my stepmother, who, after my mom passed away, he remarried. But we're beyond that turning point. I think we're beyond that point of no return. Even though some people might argue that, you know, the Norman Rockwell era of the 50s did not exist, at least in not the way we remember it or would like to remember it, nonetheless, it did exist, much more so, obviously, than today, but it was a much more civil and pleasant society, and certainly
we had
much
employment.
More
jobs weren't hard to get, you know, and you could afford a home to pay, you know, to be paying off a mortgage and stuff. And people were civil. You opened doors for ladies, and ladies sometimes opened doors for guys, I guess. But people were just polite and generally respectful of each other after the war, you know, when they'd survived this terrible thing. And it wasn't just here; it was over in Europe as well. People pulled together. But then something happened. It just died.
What happened, though? You know, when we look at this, and obviously there's a degree of social engineering in there, but I guess, you know, if we were to do a post-mortem on that society, at what point, what was the cause of death, or at what point did we lose, when did we lose control of everything?
I think it was death by 1,000 cuts, you know. They hit us in the economy. They hit us in the Hollywood movies, in legislation, bit by bit, birth control or abortion legislation, and all this kind of stuff just added bit by bit to the destruction of our culture. You know, I don't know that you can pick one thing. Just so many things were all being done at once while we slept. And then woke up one morning and we're done. I tell you what, we need to be, if there ever was a time, we need to be getting prepared for the collapse of food line, you know, food supplies and energy and water and police protection even. We need to be able to protect our homes and our little neighborhood groups, because we're going to be reduced to that when the fighting starts, the Civil War starts, and it is coming.
Stan, I just got to have to ask. I got to tap into your wisdom, and I look at you as seriously. And I'm not blowing smoke or anything. I'm looking at you as a man with a lot of wisdom based on your intellect and research. Here we are. We're entering into the summer of 2016. This is an election year. You remember 68? I'm certain the Chicago 7 at the Democratic Convention in Chicago and Kent State in 1970. And
yeah.
And do you think that we're going to see? Are we going to get through this summer unscathed, or do you think we're going to see a replay of 68 or 70? Just with a different tune, a different subject.
I tell you what, I'd be surprised if we do get through the summer and make it to the elections without major upheavals in the country. I just feel it, but I have no positive data to say that this is it.
No.
Just that feeling I get from people in general and looking at the news that we're at a focal point, the apex of the stress on the population before something snaps and people start getting real angry with each other. I don't even know if we're going to have another election. I've said that before, and I'm seeing it mentioned more frequently in the internet chatter now, that there will be an emergency happen before November that will allow the White House to say, well, we'll put the elections on temporary hold while I manage this crisis for you.
Yeah. I think more so now than ever. And I've gone through already in my short time of being awake. I've seen what the last, not 12, but, 08. I saw it happen. I saw it. You hear this talk, but now it seems to be more real or more possible than ever before. And this is why I love talking about these current events with you, is because you offer this rational perspective that
such good news.
Yeah.
And that's just it.
We're in deep stuff here, folks. Yeah. Bend over and kiss it goodbye. That's how I feel like sometimes.
Sometimes.
Well, and then you just said something, Stan. You know, you see the news every day, and you see how things continue to get worse and worse, and you talked about how, you know, there might not be an election this time around, and you've said that before, but this time it feels different. My dad said the same thing. And I think it is because of the way people are perceiving the events going on around them. They are more open to the idea that, yes, this could happen. And then you look at the shenanigans that have gone on through the primaries on both sides of the aisle.
Yeah,
and then you look at even the rhetoric coming from the president about the issue should make any citizen insecure, you know, making jokes about staying in power. And then you got the UN, the head of the top spot at the UN opening up at the end of the year.
You got Obama, and you mentioned that too, right? About Obama maybe taking a walk over from D.C. to New York as the Secretary General of the United Nations. Did you talk about that?
Yeah, I did. Maybe he'll go to the top spot there and rule by proxy with someone else that'll take his position here. Who knows?
Yeah.
I know that the establishment must, I think they're probably pretty scared of the Trump situation, that he might actually turn things around if he got into power. I'm still trying to figure out whether he's on our side or not, you know. He says all the right things, but I just wonder if it's an end-around play to get us to jump, and the resulting election will be disastrous either way. I don't know. I would like to hope, I would like to believe that what Trump promises is what he'll do when he gets in the office, if he can pull it off. But he is saying...
Yeah, I agree with you on that. But you know, even to me, even if Trump... was genuine or is genuine, and if he got elected number one, he's going to run into a lot of interference. It's going to be a gauntlet-like environment. But I truly believe, Stan, that true revival and true change is not going to come from a man. at the top, but it's going to come from individuals at the grassroots level. And in order for us to change as a nation, we have to change individually, you know, as people. And
well, people can't do that unless we give them the incentive to be educated and understand what's happening and, you know, turn back to God.
True.
When will enough be enough, you know, even for the people that only go to church on holidays and stuff, you know, I just...
That's true.
You know, I'd hoped that when I found the Garden of Eden and when I found out about Atlantis and what caused the flood that really didn't happen, that kind of stuff, I had hoped that that would be a foundation which Christians could use as a witness tool and go to their neighbors and friends and relatives or whatever and say, look, here is proof. These things are real. The Bible is based on real stuff, real events. And as such, what is coming is also foretold, and we need to get together and stop it, you know, do what we can as soldiers for the Lord. But it just doesn't seem as though it's catching on. I mean,
you know, that surprises me, if I can interject this. When we first learned of your lecture, your revelation about finding and locating the Garden of Eden, in my mind, and maybe I was just delusional, but I was thinking, you know, I was kind of planning your appearances on Good Morning America and, seriously, or, you know, shows, mainstream news shows where, hey, wait a minute, look at what, Professor Indiana Jones Standeo has really found and allowing you the time to show your discoveries. And maybe that's just a naive and delusional, you know, thought. But when you think about what you discovered and the substantiation that you have provided for this discovery, why hasn't it caught on? Do people just don't care?
I contacted every major news, television, and newspaper organization with a press statement about what I'd found, and none of them even was interested. Yet ABC, you know, TV News, Good Morning America, I think it was, they spent $200 million worth of effort down in Goro Crater, calling it Africa's Garden of Eden, you know, and live filming from the Garden of Eden in Africa. After all the stuff I'd done to prove it, they finally went down there and still would not admit it was the biblical Garden of Eden. So it did perhaps get that much attention put on that area, but not the way I wanted. I wanted people to see that it really existed. The Bible is correct, you know. And now then that I've got a method to, or information to tie the occult groups to the Bible as well, and saying, look, you guys talk about Atlantis. Well, the Bible mentions the people of Atlantis, the Nephilim and stuff like that, and even Noah lived there before the flood. And, you know, I can prove to them now then that Atlantis did exist, where it was and how it was destroyed, with scientific evidence. I mean, as each week passes, I get more and more data, so much so that I can't even present it all in a 1-hour lecture. And you know, you'd think that there would be this groundswell out there, because I've been releasing bits of it on your show and maybe the odd bit on some other shows, but mainly on your show where I have the pictures and talk about it. And I was thinking that there would be people who had friends or relatives in the media that would say, whoa, really? Atlantis? That's, you know, the secular world is interested in that. Well, okay, we'll jump on that. Oh, was destroyed by a flood and a meteor impact? Oh, that's good. Oh, in the flood of Noah, well, okay, yeah, okay. And you can see them drift off with that. But I was thinking this would be a secular approach that would get their attention. But just, you know, I don't know. It's frustrating.
Yeah, wow.
This morning I woke up for a bit. I was in a bit of hurt this morning, so I woke up before sun up and I was laying there thinking. And I was thinking about the time of day. I mean, I know this is dumb, but the time of day that great asteroid that caused the flood and the sinking of Atlantis, what time of day did it come? You know, a dumb question, right? And I stood outside of my mind up on top of the solar system, and I saw the sun and shining light on the Earth, and I realized that most asteroids come in toward the sun in some direction. They come from out, coming in. So seeing that this asteroid hit the Earth in the direction of spin, you know, not against the spin of the Earth, that meant that the meteor able to calculate that, that no matter whether there's a high asteroid orbit or a lower planet one coming in toward the sun and hitting us, whatever this thing was, it was a very high-placed object coming down into our orbit. But when it hit the Earth, it hit it with a shallow impact. And it hit it between about 1 o'clock in the morning and about 4 o'clock is how I could figure that from looking at what part of the Earth would still be exposed to an incoming asteroid. And I was pleased with myself, and so I thought, well, okay, what angle did the thing hit the Earth at? I know it was shallow, but how do we determine the angle? And then I figured, okay, we draw a line, a tangent to the surface of the planet, and blah, 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 and connect the lines between where the meteor entered the Earth and then where it pushed up a bunch of the Earth underneath the mantle over toward New Guinea. And so when I finally did surface and get into the office this morning, I put in simulations into my animation programs and into Google Earth and all kinds of stuff. I was able to find out that this huge asteroid did impact the Earth at an angle of 35 degrees from the horizon, and it was roughly making a crater of 250 miles in diameter, which is, a reasonably large area, to be impacted that way. And I found the little tiny signals of it in some data I got from the institute. My mind goes blank on it. The one I use for the Garden of Eden discussions. It's right on the tip of my tongue. Anyway, it's an institute over in California that does research, marine research, and I used their data, and I was able to find the impact crater off the coast of India, just right on the edge of the coast. But with their data, I was able to see that it didn't make a round hole. Not from the surface looking down. It made a slant hole because it hit at that 35-degree angle. It shoved stuff out into the oceans at an angle. But I could see the institute had drawn a contour line down in the impact area showing the shape of the low sea level, low bathymetry readings there, and it made an oval shape. So I used that oval shape, and I said, well, if it were a circle, that would be spot on, like the Barringer crater in Arizona did. It'd be a big round crater, but this is an elliptical thing in the seabed. And so taking the width of the ellipse and the length of it, I could determine from trigonometry what the angle of impact was at 35 degrees. And so then I stuck a rod through the Earth with my animation program, stuck it through eastern India there, and let it come out where it did into Indonesia. And then I physically measured there with a little line what the angle of impact was, and I got about 36 degrees there. So I know that that's right. I've been able to accurately tell that that was the impact at that angle. And then I started thinking, well, how much energy was that in that impact? You know, it was about 10 miles in diameter, bigger than the Chicxulub thing, which was variously reported between 6 and 7.5 miles in diameter. And I thought, well, okay, how, in nuclear terms, how many, megatons of energy was in that? And I thought, well, we'll use Nagasaki's bomb, because it was 20 kilotons. And the impact of this meteor was 100 billion times greater than the bomb over Nagasaki. 100 billion times.
Incomprehensible.
Now, if you compare it to the Tunguska event, it's 134 million times greater than the Tunguska explosion over Russia, which leveled thousands of miles of, or square miles of trees and stuff. And when it hit, it threw up a splash. We've been calculating this using some of the NASA formulas. It kicked up about 4,800 cubic miles of seawater into the atmosphere, and it was boiling, because imagine a meteor hitting, it's hot, right? And it threw up by impact 4,800 cubic miles of water into the upper atmosphere as water vapor, which of course started to rain prolifically, but it was hot because of the heat the thing impacted into our mantle. So the water kept boiling up and condensing in the upper atmosphere of the troposphere and coming back down as rain. Noah's flood, 40 days of rain, right? Okay, that was where the rain came from that impact and the heat from it, condensing, falling down as rain. And then the fountains of the deep breaking up. Well, this thing skimmed at an angle underneath the surface of the Earth, hitting it kind of almost sideways, breaking up what's called the Moho discontinuity, which is an area between 5 and 15 miles deep, a sphere or a shell all underneath the mantle. And it had hot water in it with a density about three times that of seawater or of tap water. And that, those pressurized areas underneath the mantle were broken up, and they were hot on their own, but when the heat of the impact got them, they started squirting out hot water into the oceans, and that continued for 110 days in the Noah's epic. And it would have made tidal waves that left Indonesia, hit across the United States, hit across Europe, and, into where Noah was there in the Turkey region. It would have swept the planet several times with huge, hundreds of feet high tidal waves that were boiling water almost. So, you know, when you start getting down to the nitty-gritty of it, it gets very exciting because you're seeing what caused all these things. That water that was kicked up in the first impact there, which just shoved it up, was enough to put 2 inches of water all over the planet at once, every square foot of the planet with 2 inches of water. And, of course, that fell as rain in various places as the clouds formed. But anyway, when you put it into perspective, this was a mighty, mighty event that happened. And to me, it is so exciting to find this historical impact that explains so many mysteries about how Indonesia formed and why there are little glass spherules of impact all over Marble Bar in northwestern Australia that they found a couple of weeks back. And they still don't, the professor found it, still doesn't believe that the impact I showed him was the one that did it. And I've discovered with this the largest impact crater on the planet in the history of the planet. And you would think that this would be absolutely, foot stomping, jumping up in the air, yelling Eureka news, but it's just not happening out there. People are just kind of going ho-hum.
Any speculation as to why the news wouldn't pick up on it? I mean, it's not like it is, even if you took the biblical story out of it and stuck with the scientific only, scientifically provable. I mean, that's still a big discovery.
Yeah.
I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why. It's one simple thing. It's the age of the universe problem. This happened in the last 4,000 years. And they say, well, okay, a meteor did impact, but that was back, 100 million years ago. And that's the bugaboo. Unless they will get off of that age, saying that we're formed by gradualism over hundreds of millions of years, unless they get past that, they can't even accept the fact that Earth has expanded 25 to 28% from its original size and stretched the continents apart. They're still thinking there's continental drift at 1 inch per year or some rubbish like that. That's why they're not accepting it, because they have to go against their tenure, what they were taught by all their fellow academians, and I'm just pushing it uphill trying to get the truth to them. I just wish there were someone in the community there, in the scientific community, that would hear this and understand and start, spreading the word that maybe we better reevaluate our dating concepts. Just one.
Well, the Darwinism hinges upon that. I mean, they need that length of time, right? I mean, evolution is contingent upon that long cycle or that long Earth.
Hey, if you can go to your computer there to my show images page.
Yep.
Second row, first image.
Got it.
That's what I'm working on right now. The black areas are countries that were moved by the impact, and I want you to look at the difference between looking at a satellite image or a Google Earth image of the ocean bottom and of continents and mountains and stuff like that in color versus black and white. If you look at that image, I've got a white line and an orange line coming out of the area in India where the crater was made by the meteor. And you follow that off to the right, and you'll see an actual ridge, the edge of the dirt and seabed that was pushed up by that meteor. You'll see that ridge. It's heading right toward New Guinea. That is the end of where that meteor traveled right there. That's why we have that funny curl in the islands of Indonesia there. You're seeing where the meteor stopped. It shoved mass ahead of it under New Guinea, but it stopped right where that ridge is. Like you hit a sandy beach, you know, with a plane crash, and it would shove up a mound of dirt ahead of it. That's what you're seeing in black and white there. And it's just so clear when you see it in black and white rather than in color. That's where that meteor stopped. Now just look at that. That's just incredible to see that. It's been right before our eyes for generations. And especially in the last 50, 60 years, we've had such an increase in knowledge. You would think that others would have said, "Ah, what caused that?" And it wasn't gradualism. It was a catastrophic impact. And there it is right before us. And you can see where Australia is in this image I'm making. And there's a little gray kind of area off the northwest side of Australia there with little horns. It looks like it's just part of the sea sediment. And right in line with that, going down to the coast of Australia, is where Marble Bar is. And that's where they have all of that mysterious glass beads that were formed by some huge asteroid impact, and they can't find the asteroid. That's why it sprayed it, because that's where Australia was when it hit. It just threw stuff right on top of Australia. It's frustrating.
Yeah.
Well, it's excellent.
There are the answers. There's the answer right there, folks, for all the scientists in the mainstream media listening. You know, both of you. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, Lord.
Isn't that something?
Well, that's why, guys. It's just that we have that one thing that, you know, they say, oh, you're a religious nut if you say the earth is 6,000 years old. Well, the Garden of Eden tale goes back 6,000 years, but the earth was probably formed before that and cooled and whatever, so we're older as a planet than that, but not millions of years. We're talking thousands or tens of thousands for everything to form and cool. And, you know, if we can't get mainstream science to look past their peer group pressure, then we have no hope of teaching. I mean, it's like the church, oppressing, you know, scientists that were coming up with the fact, like Copernicus, that the Earth actually went around the sun. Everything didn't revolve around the Earth, but he was just absolutely clobbered by the church for his heresy in the scientific area. And it took generations for that to be fully accepted. And here we are faced with this thing, which is just as earth-shattering to the human concept as that was. And we're facing the same thing without a lot of time left to prove it to people.
Speaking of not having a lot of time left, Stan, you know, you sat with us graciously for the entire program. We've got about 60 seconds left. what a great conversation tonight.
Well, it's probably just mainly me voicing my frustration with current events. And I wish the Lord would come soon. I really do. We need to put this house in order, and he's the only one that can do it.
Amen to that.
Yeah. And folks, Stan Dale, and I'm going to repeat what I said when he first came on, you know, not feeling well. Please, doing so much work. Please, when you hit your knees tonight, please have prayers for Stan and for his restoration, physical ailments, and for Holly. Please pray for both of them. Because we need you around, buddy. We love you. We need you.
Well, thank you.
We love it.
Thanks for staying with us tonight, Stan. Yeah. God bless you. You have a good night. You and Holly get some rest.
All right, guys. I'm going to go upstairs.
Great conversation.
Sit down, I think.
All right.
Tomorrow, we will be covering news, followed by open phone lines for the second 2 hours of tomorrow. We want to hear from you. And don't forget, Ted Brewer will be on Friday.
Yeah, it's going to be a great week. And Memorial Day is coming up. We'll have a discussion about that later.
Have a good night, everyone.
Good night.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.